live from the mist-enshrouded mountaintop fortress that is X and Y Communications headquarters. You're listening to the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
Greetings and welcome again to another episode of the Big Mountaintop Podcast. Today, I have a new friend of mine as co-host, and you've probably heard his name before, especially if you are a small business owner or what would be called a solopreneur. And hopefully, if you read all of his books, you're no longer a solopreneur or a company of one, as he would like to call it, but you're now a company of thousands, as he hopes you are. His name, of course, is Michael E. Gerber, and he's from Carlsbad, California. According to Inc. magazine, who would know these things, he's the world's number one small business guru. And indeed, he's the best-selling small business author of all time, multiple New York Times best-selling books, all in the E-Myth series, or at least for the most part, including his latest, which is called Beyond the E-Myth. Michael, man, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Scott.
And you and I have been getting to know each other a little bit, which is an honor, of course, because you're extremely well-known for what you do. It's really exciting to have you here. And what I was incredibly attracted to was the idea that you brought to us about doing a show on leaving a legacy, because at the basic core, I think that's what the E-Myth series is all about. It's not necessarily being so tied to being the one man in the one business, but building something that can be scaled and replicated and sold off again. And I'd really love to start off by hearing your idea of what a legacy is and why we should be even interested in leaving one at all.
Well, a legacy is the right of every human being and the opportunity for every human being. And a legacy is defined in the dictionary, but I believe a legacy is defined by each and every one of us. So we set out in our lives without even thinking about legacy. But I'm suggesting every single one of us must think about legacy, because whatever we leave behind is our legacy. And that's either transformational or so-so or who noticed or just about anything you can imagine it would be. I'm suggesting very, very strongly that it's our role in life to determine intentionally what that legacy will be, and then spend our entire lives pursuing it.
Now, for a guy who may be thinking, okay, well, you know what? I just finished high school. I just finished college. I don't even know what I want to do with my life yet. What are the first steps to saying to oneself, you know I don't want to die and be forgotten. I know I want to leave the world a better place than I found it. But man, I don't even know where to start, Michael. What do I do? What do I think about?
Well, you first of all, think about, I don't even know where to start. And you begin to ask yourself the question, so what's missing in this picture? In other words, why don't I even know where to start? Is there something that I could have learned, some way I could have been, something I could have done, some questions I could have pursued, et cetera, and so forth, to be able to say something other than I have no idea where to start? Do other people who have obviously left a legacy, the greatest minds on earth, for example, did they know what to pursue? Did they know where to start? Did they have a calling of sorts? What's the difference between someone who leaves an obvious legacy and everyone else who doesn't? So you see, this is not something that is not available or unavailable to all of us. This is something that begs the question of all of us, the definition of a legacy at the very beginning. So as an example, I have a child, and I might begin the conversation with my child about this idea that every life is a legacy. There's a legacy following on the trail of every life. In short, we don't just go. Somehow, we leave something in the space we inhabited What is that something I'm here to leave? What a great question for kids to begin to ask. You follow me?
Oh, I absolutely do. And I'm absolutely intrigued and fascinated by what you're talking about and how you've kind of flipped conventional wisdom on its ear by saying that. Because I do have a lot of guys who come to me as a dating and relationship coach, Michael, and they say, look, I know women are interested in a guy being interesting and having a passion and having a purpose, but man, I got nothing. And I'm telling them things like, hey, you know, go watch YouTube videos until something's amazing and you've got to do it. I mean, start somewhere. I don't know how a guy goes through his whole life being passionate about nothing and having no plan for anything other than watching the game on TV tonight. But what you're talking about is that if we have a role model, if we have a mentor, if we have someone who pulls us aside and says, hey, you know what? Your life does mean something. Start thinking at an early age as possible about building the habit of believing that, and you will perhaps be able to parlay that into something that's meaningful, perhaps without having to dig so hard for it in your adulthood, right?
Yeah, well, understand, if we could take this even farther than that.
Sure.
If we can take this to the impersonal rather than the personal, I like to say that a dream, when I speak about entrepreneurship, a dream isn't personal, it's impersonal. It's not about me, it's about them. So as with that, a legacy isn't about me, it's about them. And so if I can depersonalize this, I begin to look at it through a completely different eyes, through a completely different perspective. And so I want to open up that window, if you will. I want to open up that question. I don't want to open up an answer. I don't want to send them to do something. I want to awaken someone that already exists within him, who's triggered by an experience that he was not anticipating a answer to, but a question from. And so the work I've been doing all these years has really been aggravating everybody. We call me here at Gerber the chief aggravator.
Right, sure.
And so that's what I do. I aggravate everybody. Now, is that my legacy? No, my legacy is something completely other than that. But what I'm saying is, it's not a bad way to approach life. Because the minute I regard myself as the chief aggravator, I'm essentially really saying that I am distinctly and always uncovering what's missing in this picture. And what's missing in this picture, with a guy who walks up to me and says, I want to be a speaker like you. How do I become a speaker like you? My response to that could be, well, let me show you what I do to become a speaker like me. But that's never been my answer. My answer has been, why in the world would you want to be a speaker? Now, I understand I didn't say and then and then and then. I just said, why in the world would you want to be a speaker? Well, the minute I ask him that question, I'm being the chief aggravator. Because I could be, as is commonly done, oh, well, that's not as difficult as you might think. Go to speaker.com and blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden, I'm taking him someplace to become what he wants to become. I'm putting into question, why would you even want to become like me? Suggesting, as I say that, there ain't no great thing about being like me. So it's an interesting thing that happens because I'm provoking a question, not providing an answer.
Well, I think that's a completely different way of looking at it than most people who would consider themselves to be, you know, great motivators of young minds would look at it. You know, we're used to hearing, oh, you can be president someday if you want to be. But now you're asking this question as the, you know, self-proclaimed provocateur that you are. You know, why do you want to do that? And why is a confrontational question.
Yep.
Is almost accusatory. Like, what are you thinking, almost? And it,
well,
really,
I'm accusing him. I'm accusing,
sure,
him. Yeah, of having a stupid idea.
And now they have to defend it. Have you thought this through? A lot of times I get the same thing, Michael. People come to me and go, wow, you're a dating coach. You teach guys with no game how to get women. Well, there's a lot more to what I do than that. And most of it involves a lot of time. Some of it's a lot of stress. And nearly all of it is very different than how people envision it. And it's not always so quote unquote glamorous. So you're the chief aggravator. And when you're talking to guys who are thinking about the vision they may have for the future, you're coming to that table from the perspective of realizing, hey, look, what's comfortable, what's status quo, what's stagnant may not always be where a real man steps up and leaves a legacy. Because doing something different, leaving a mark, making a difference in this world often involves something disruptive, something that gets aggravated. And I'd love for you to dig even more into that. Give us some examples, maybe from your life or from people you know, who they've thought that they wanted to do something, and this seemed like their passion, and then in reality, the calling turned out being much different. I know that my case has been like that, but I'd like to hear some from you.
Well, I can give you story after story after story. I've worked with over 100,000 small business clients. That's incomprehensible to most people. We've had over 100,000 small business clients, and every single one of them came to realize that what they thought was going to be just magical and wonderful and terrific. And so it was just a stupid, stupid thing.
They all got disrupted and aggravated, right?
Oh, well, yeah, but they were aggravated when they met me. You understand? I mean, they were aggravated. They thought that. I thought that. I had an idea that I was excited about going out on my own and doing my own thing and blah, blah, blah. And it would be this and it would be that. And I could take home all the money and I wouldn't have to answer to anybody. And I mean, it's just such an empty myth for 99% of the people who do it, because it's nothing like they ever expected it would be. It's just like when you say how to get women, how to get women isn't the problem. What to do with them after you've gotten them is the problem.
Amen to that. I think right now would be a good point. I want to interject this for guys who aren't so familiar with your work, Michael. Let's talk about what the e-myth is, because I think that alone is a disruptive concept.
Absolutely. So the e-myth is the entrepreneurial myth. And it essentially says that people who go into business on their own aren't the entrepreneurs everybody says they are, but rather what I've come to call technicians suffering from an entrepreneurial seizure. In fact, they created their own company, their own business, really to get rid of the boss. So now they've gotten rid of the boss, and now they are the boss, and now they're working for a lunatic. So effectively, they aren't entrepreneurs at all. And even the expression solopreneurs is exactly the opposite of what they really are. That's just making nice. They're not really, in quotes, solopreneurs, because there's nothing, no reality to being a solopreneur. And that's sort of putting, I'm on my own and an entrepreneur. Now, those two things don't even come close to fitting together. It's broken before you even start.
Right. It's kind of a non sequitur.
It's a non sequitur. That was simply some info marketer's idea of how to pander to guys who are doing it on their own. Now he's calling them solopreneurs, so there's sort of a romanticism related to it. But the life of, in quotes, a solopreneur, there's nothing romantic about it.
Now, would you say that the word solopreneur in and of itself, because it's so popular and you see it plastered everywhere, are you saying it's more of a misnomer than even a euphemism? It's just wrong?
Yeah, it's stupid. It's just a bad idea. In fact, I met the guy who created it. And I challenged him on it, and he really got pissed off at me. But that's my job. But it's so easy to do, don't you see? All of us, we're so out of it. We don't even know what a human being is. So, I mean, we look out into the universe, can't even imagine what it is. Who are we? What are we doing here? How did we get here? You know, we could say, well, there's this thing called evolution, but that doesn't explain anything. You understand? None of it explains anything. So here we are making up terms, making up realities, making up thoughts and ideas and so forth. And so we don't even know the basic reality that brought us here. We've got beliefs about it. If we're religious, if we're Christian, we have one belief. If we're Jewish, we have another belief. If we're Muslim, we have another belief. If we're Buddhist, we have another belief. But we have all these different beliefs. Who's right?
Well, we in the Western culture definitely need to feel like we know it all and have it in a box, don't we?
Well, yeah, but everybody outside does too. I mean, you understand jihadism, et cetera, and so forth. I mean, it's not as though they haven't made up their mind about something. Understand. So it's not just here, us in the Western world. It's everyone, everywhere, in whatever world. And so if that's true, and it is true, there's no way of anybody can argue with that, then we have to really begin the process anew. And so I call that a blank piece of paper in beginner's mind. I'm suggesting that every single one of us have to begin again, not to go out in the business world and fix the business I've got, what I call fixing broken businesses. I've been in the business of fixing broken businesses for 40 years. I've completely altered the path I'm on. Rather than fixing broken businesses, we're now creating new ones. We're saying to the guy who's got a broken business, and it is, that in fact, it's a waste of time trying to fix it. Don't waste your energy. Don't waste your time. Let's begin anew. You can keep it there, meaning keep it doing what it's doing, but don't waste your time trying to fix it. Let's start with a blank piece of paper and beginner's mind and start it anew while it keeps on doing what it's doing, however haphazardly or unsatisfactorily it's doing it. And let's put our attention over here. Not full time, but at least enough of the time so we can begin anew to begin to ask questions we've never asked before. That's really what we're about in Beyond the E-Myth.
So what we're talking about here is building a scalable, sustainable business, of course. Otherwise, you're going to stay that company of one forever, and you're basically going to be employing yourself. I can't help but remember when I fired my boss, when I did my version of that. I had worked basically for Dilbert Incorporated for several years, and I couldn't believe the stupidity of management's decisions that I was subject to and had to work under. And I finally said to myself, you know, there's one great thing, although this is scary as hell, you know, being my own boss already, because I grew up in a household where, you know, that was for foolish people, you know, who were subject to getting sued and having to pay taxes and pay other people's salaries and stuff. I said, there's one thing that you can't take away from what I'm about to experience. If there's a crappy management decision made, instead of feeling helpless, I got to look in the mirror. I got that going for me. But see, I think even that is something you would challenge, right? Because it shouldn't be all about me and my business decisions. I should be growing and scaling.
Well, yes, yeah, Scott, but I challenge everything. So you have to understand, that's just the nature of the beast. I challenge everything.
Right.
And I challenge everything because it deserves being challenged. That's where the energy is. Where the juice is in the challenge. It's really opening doors and windows to a foreign space that we're uncomfortable living in. And in the process, discovering things we've never discovered before. We'll discover what the real questions are. We'll discover what the real process is. We'll discover what the real outcome is. We'll discover, in language that we used before, what the true legacy is. In short, what I'm called to do. So I'm a human being, and I'm called to do something that has a reason for being, a meaning behind it that is important. It's not to make me important. It's important because they're important. And by their, meaning I'm saying them, my most important consumer, he, she is important, and he's not living his life as though he or she is important. I want to wake them up to that. Who am I to do that? I'm just me doing that. You understand? I'm either successfully doing that or unsuccessfully doing that, but that's my calling. My calling is to wake him or wake her up to that. And in the process, opening the possibility that something exists they've never seen before. And when they see it, it's going to, on its own, awaken the part of them who begins to hear a call that becomes, at the very heart of it, the reason for their being, which is, in fact, the call to their legacy.
Now, listening to you talk, I can't help but have my thoughts turn towards the simple reality that the masses are tone deaf to legacy and even to ambition. Most of us are content to do what we did yesterday and wake up tomorrow morning and do the same thing over again. That's the masses, Michael. That's 90% of us. The cream of the crop become entrepreneurs like you're talking about. Yet it is so exciting and it makes you feel so alive to pursue what you're talking about. Do you think people shy away, and that's the term I'm going to use, from being disrupted in the way you're talking about because of fear, because of pure shyness, selfishness, laziness, or some combination of all of it? Because I can see dimensions of all of that rearing its ugly head in that context, potentially.
All of the above.
Yeah.
All of the above. However, I'm naive, let's say, naive enough to believe that it can be done. If I can imagine it to be done, it can be done. Whether or not I ever rise high enough to be able to achieve it, I'm saying it can be done because I've done it in the limited way that I have. Now, in the limited way I have is significantly far beyond what most people have done. But still, what you describe, but Michael, you're talking about something that 90% of the people on the face of this planet, by evidence, aren't even interested in. And I'd say they may not be, but there's a way to aggravate them to the point where they will be. In short, there's something missing in the system that's enabled them to go to sleep forever.
Now, do you think that's by design? Because there are people who would say the entire university system is designed to make worker bees. They don't teach entrepreneurship really in colleges and universities because we need people to be our accountants and be our doctors and be our lawyers and be the people who do work for other people. There can't be too many chiefs and not enough Indians, as it were. So it's almost as if the few who will become the entrepreneurs self-select and that cream rises to the top. Is that something you would agree with?
Well, I'd agree with part of it. I wouldn't agree with all of it. I don't believe anybody sat down and said the purpose of education is to create worker bees. I don't believe anybody actually sat down and connived with each other to create a dumb educational system as dumb as it is right now. I would say that it happened simply because they are as dumb as we are. So in short, the reality of it becomes a comfort zone. So the orchestration of the institution called education has been really self-serving.
Yes. And then that in a combination of ye old Hanlon's razor, which is, you know, if something, don't chalk something up to malevolence when it's just as easily explained by flat out ignorance.
Yeah, it's just we don't know any better.
Right.
So I'm just simply saying we don't know any better. And I know that we don't know any better. At least I believe it to be true. And then all that we need to do is to make certain we create a way that people begin to know better. And it's then my obligation, your obligation, Scott, his obligation, her obligation, then to work steadfastly on the process of discovering what that way is. Just like Einstein discovered what he discovered, just like Westinghouse discovered what he discovered, just like Steve Jobs discovered what he discovered, just like anybody discovered whatever they discovered, there is a way to do anything and everything on the face of the planet. And if there's a way to do it, then there's a better way to do it. And if there's a better way to do it, there's a best way to do it. And I'm suggesting that we can begin to teach from the very beginning children to pursue that path of enlightenment. And I'm essentially saying that they are born with the ability to pursue that. But the way the system works currently is it kills that natural passion for pursuing the unknown. Kids pursue the unknown with glee. And sooner than later, they begin to realize you don't do that because it isn't safe. So we learn what isn't safe as though we're learning the right way to live our lives.
Stay away from that which is dangerous, in other words, is what we're taught.
Yeah. You're going to burn your hand when you touch that. You're going to do this when you do that. You're going to be, yeah. It said on and on and on and on. We all know what I'm talking about.
It's yeah. A, don't talk to strangers.
Right. Yeah. I mean, as opposed to talk to every stranger you can meet. All I'm saying is, you know that. I know that. We know that. And it makes good sense to whom? plebeian people. It makes good sense to we who become good followers. And then there's the anarchist who blows everything up. But there's something there in the middle waiting to be discovered. And that's what I believe is possible for every single one of us. Now, if in fact every single one of us, the ones I'm talking about, are the guys, the littlest of all guys who have gone out on their own, they're self-employed. That's effectively who they are. They've already gone beyond the ordinary. They're now self-employed. I'm saying they simply haven't gone far enough. So I'm saying, okay, you've done that. You've done it. You've had the courage to go out on your own. You've taken the risk. You've done something that, in fact, isn't the easiest thing to do. But I'm suggesting now you've only begun to touch it. You haven't even really begun to understand it. And now I want to take you further than that.
So let's turn this into a practical discussion before we close, Michael. Let's say I'm a young guy and I'm just feeling either too selfish or lazy to even acknowledge that legacy even matters. How are you going to disrupt me, awaken me out of my slumber, or is it even worth it until I get some bolt of lightning from somewhere else internally?
I'm going to find a way to do that. You're asking me, what is that way? Well, I've found a way to do that. And I found a way to do that with small business owners. And what I found was I've got to challenge his reality. And so I invite him to a free seminar. And that free seminar was called Key Frustrations in a Small and Growing Business and What to Do About Them. Now, I've already identified that we have frustrations, and I've already identified that I have some handle on what the key frustrations are. And I've already suggested that I have a handle on what to do about them. So at least he's curious about what I'm going to show him in this free seminar. And it's 3 hours long. So he comes to this seminar with the somewhat casual desire to, well, what's this all about? What's this all about? What's this all about? And so I get up on the stage, I get up on the stand, I get up in front of the audience of 30, 40, 50, 60, 70. They're all business owners. They have to be to get in the door. They have to sign on. And the very first thing I say to them, well, hi, guys, we're all here. You're all in the same pickle. You all own your own small business. You're in different venues. You know, you're a chiropractor. You're an attorney. You're a software provider, you're a candle maker, you're a baker, you're whatever. And every single one of you got frustrations. You got frustrations about people, you got frustrations about money, you got frustrations about time, you got frustrations about you can't find and keep good enough customers, you got frustrations about all manner and forms of things. And the reality is every single one of you know what those frustrations are. In short, you probably nodded your head yes when I said what some of those frustrations are. Every one of you have had them because you're in a small business. You own a small business. But I'm going to say here at this three-hour event, we're not going to talk about any of them. Now, yes, I know we called this Key Frustrations in a Small and Growing Business and What to Do About Them. But in fact, I'm going to go to the source of the problem. I'm not going to identify the frustrations themselves because they make absolutely no difference. Until we truly understand why we have those frustrating experiences, what's created them, we'll never get beyond them. So here we're going to address what's creating those frustrations. And that's going to be the very, very painful part of this process for each and every one of you. Because in fact, every one of those frustrations have nothing to do with the true problem. The true problem in every business in this room is the guy sitting in this room. It's the owner. You're the problem. You've always been the problem. You always will be the problem. And every single frustration you have has been created by that singular fact. And this 3 hours is my opportunity to share with you why, until you address that problem, truly change the way you think and feel about what you do, your frustrations are going to simply get worse and worse and worse to the point where your company, like 90% of all small businesses doing what you do on this planet, ultimately fail. In short, you're on the way to going out of business. You don't even know that. And that's the other part of the problem. So let's get started.
Now, see, that flies in the face of the proliferation of it's not your fault marketing, huh?
Yeah. And I would say to it's not your fault marketing bullshit.
Well, we're short of time. And I know you're on a pretty strict schedule here. These guys are going to come at me with torches and pitchforks if we don't talk about your wife. You have a lovely wife who you married at age 70. Her name's Lustalia. And you are now an 80-year-old man. So this has been a 10-year blissful relationship for the two of you. I would love to hear your advice to any men who are 50, 60, 70 years old out there and beyond who think they're washed up and none of the women are going to love them. They're too old and they're just never going to find love. What do you have to say to those guys?
Well, first of all, I have to correct some assumptions that you've made in the process.
Here we go.
It's a blissful relationship. No relationship is blissful other than ultimately the one I might have with God. And that's not blissful either because I'm so stupid.
Well, I don't want to overstate things, but obviously you're still together. And I've seen the video. Don't play coy with me, Mr. Gerber, because I've seen the video of her just looking at you like she adores you when you're talking on video. Come on, I get that look from my wife, too.
Yeah, she does adore me, but she understands. She also knows me.
So, well, that's good.
Yeah. She adores me, and she knows me. So she also has serious questions about me. But you understand, we know this is our last time. I've been married four times, Scott. When you speak about marriage, I've been married four times. So when I said to you, it's not about getting a woman, it's about what to do with her afterward. It's about what she does with you. So effectively, understand, I've never really left any of them. They've effectively left me. And so the reason for all of that is that I'm not easy to live with. And if I'm the chief aggravator, how could I possibly be easy to live with? And you'd have to talk to my wife about all that. But I'm saying to all these guys, there is always hope. I'm 80. I'm starting a new enterprise. I intend to open up 150 cities and deliver a new dreaming room in every single one of them once every month in the hands of leaders who we train and certify to do that. And to know that every single one of those dreaming rooms have the same profound impact as when I do it. I'm doing that starting at the age of 80, gentlemen. So I'm either out of my freaking mind, and there's a part of me that is, or I know something that, in fact, you need to know. And I'm saying that, in fact, there is no age for anything. There's only when it happens. And it happens when it happens. And it's always a surprise to me.
I think you need to give us the elevator pitch for what a dreaming room is so we know.
A dreaming room is for the purpose of awakening the entrepreneur within. And an entrepreneur is four different personalities: a dreamer, a thinker, a storyteller, and a leader. A dreamer has a dream, a thinker has a vision, a storyteller has a purpose, and a leader has a mission. We could go into a very, very lengthy conversation, but understand the process, those 2.5 days, is to inspire every single one in the audience to discover something they've never discovered before, that entrepreneurship isn't what they believe it to be. Entrepreneurship is an awareness of something they've never seen before in a way they've never seen it. And in that great seeing, in that moment of clarity, that epiphany occurs, and that epiphany is life transforming. I'm saying that if you're 60, you're just a kid.
I love it.
You understand that? You're just a freaking kid.
I don't understand it because I'm only 50, but there's a guy out there 30 going, you guys have to be kidding me. I love what you're saying.
Yeah. I'm 30 years older than you.
You were 30 when I was born. Probably thinking, oh my God, I just turned 30 and that's the day I was born.
Think about that. That's what I'm sharing with everybody. And you got to join me in the dreaming room, because until you experience it, you'll have no understanding of what I'm talking about. You're going to just have to trust that my credibility essentially says that I've done more in the world of business coaching. I invented business coaching in 1977. The entire industry is built upon what I created. Now, if you can do that and then start anew at 80, then there's something there waiting for every single one of you. You just don't know what it is yet. And I'm determined to help you to find it.
I just may take you up on that dreaming room invitation. I like
it. You got to do it, Scott.
All right. I also got to tell these guys about your book that's called Beyond the E-Myth. And I'm going to tell you what I love about this book. It is concise. You just drop the hammer on pretty much the essence of everything you teach guys and do it in like 120 pages. And it's brilliant. It hits you right between the eyes. And guys, you got to check it out. You already know this guy's smart. You know he's a good guy. My goodness, he's 80 years old and he's starting an entrepreneurial enterprise from the ground up right now. And you just listen to this guy and know he's going to crush it for another 50 years. So what you got to do is you got to go to www.mountaintoppodcast.com/Gerber and get a load of this guy in his white hat and look at the joy for life this guy has. Take a look at his lovely wife, who we mentioned already, and definitely get your hands on that book because I think it is a life changer. Michael, you're awesome, man. You're my brother from another mother, I think. Although we, you know, you've just absolutely disrupted the hell out of me on this thing. Not verbally. You're the most kind, easygoing, disruptive person I've ever met. I should tell that to my, you know, 9-year-old son and my 4-year-old daughter. But it's a pleasure to have you on. I can't thank you enough.
My delight. And thanks for straightening out the sound.
Yeah, we had that little issue to iron out with the microphones up front, a little switcheroo here, and we sounded great.
It's perfect. I'll see you all at the Dreaming Room.
Absolutely. And guys, if you haven't gotten in on my newsletter yet, you need to go to www.mountaintoppodcast.com and get in on that. I'll give you actionable advice on a daily basis on how to get better with women. Doesn't matter whether you're in a relationship or not just yet. You can be married. You can be dating. You can be still looking. Doesn't matter. And also, when you get there, you can sign up for a free 25-minute discovery call with either me or one of my coaches, and we'll help motivate you if we don't disrupt you a little bit in the process. So once again, for Michael Lee Gerber, thank you so much for listening, guys. Until I talk to you again real soon, this is Scott McKay. Be good out there.
Mountaintop Podcast is copyright 2016 by X and Y Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to visit www.mountaintoppodcast.com for show notes. And while you're there, sign up for the X and Y Communications newsletter. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the Mountaintop Podcast.